So welcome to the Parsha Shir. Parsha's Baloskla is coming up, defining humility. So a lot of these ideas I was thinking about and listening to many of the Hasbedim for Rabbi Wolf. And I just thought that because it's Parsha and it's very relevant, we would go through the area of Anivus and try to define it exactly. And also I went through a couple of Gemaras over Yontif, interesting Gemaras in Sota, mixed into the whole Gemara is about Birkas Kohanim, and there's a couple of good stories there about Anivas, so we'll look at those as well. So the main pasuk that is the source of Anivas in general is from this week's Parsha, Bamidbar Yud Beis. At the very end, it says, Va'ish Moshe Anav Me'od Mikol Ha'adam Asher Apnei Ha'adama. So when Miriam and Aaron had spoken about Moshe, and they were punished, in between that, it says that Moshe was very humble, and he was humbler, or had more humility, than any man that was on the face of the earth. So Rashi, immediately, he tries to define what Anivus is. And he says that Anivus is Shafel V'Savlan. So the first definition of Anivus comes from Rashi. And Shafel means lowly, like Shafal is very low. And Savlan is somebody who's tolerant, who's patient. So the two ideas that Rashi puts down for Anivus, again, are Shafel, lowliness of spirit, which I don't think means a low self-esteem. It doesn't mean depression, but it means a certain perspective of yourself, and Savlon, which is patience. So I just wanted to start the shir off with a quick idea based on Rashi. So can we give can we elaborate further as to how to define humility in the framework of Rashi? So what is the idea of Savlon, patience? What's the perfection of being a patient human being? So it seems to me that patience emerges from a recognition that things are out of your control, that you can't control everything. People who are impatient believe or have an innate belief that they can control what happens outside of themselves, and they get frustrated when things aren't going their way, and they feel or there's a conflict between their fantasy of control and reality, and what's really going on outside of themselves, which they can't control. So the anivus, the anav, is the exact opposite. So an anav is a shafel, meaning that he understands his true role in society, and if you understand your true role relative to God and relative to others, you should recognize that you're really small, you're nothing, not in a emotionally, psychologically damaging way, but you're really very small in the context of history, of course, relative to God. And that should create a savlanus, a patience, which is a recognition that because you're so small and really insignificant, ultimately, recognize that there's so much out of your control, that you're really not a controller fundamentally at all, and you have very little power as to what goes on outside of yourself, and even within yourself, and even what happens to you. So Rashi's definition of anivus, I think, is recognizing your true significance. And as a result, or the result of being a shafel, is also recognizing a lack of control. And that's really the definition of Rashi as to what Anivus is. And Moshe apparently had maximized these qualities. He really recognized, despite the fact that he was Moshe, he really recognized his true significance. And as a result of that, he also acknowledged the amount that existed in the world that was out of his control. And he really wasn't someone who believed or maintained that he was in control of everything. So just a quick little definition of Anivas from Rashi. But I just wanted to continue. Obviously, we're not going to stop there. We're going to keep going. So Rabbeinu Bachya on Anivas mentions a different idea, a different concept I think he points to. And let's look at inside. He says, Va'ish Moshe Anav, Milas Anav B'chesron Yud. So the word anav in the Torah is missing a yud. It should be ayin nun yud vav, but instead it's lacking a yud. It's chaser. V'hu haya shalim b'midas ha'anava. Moshe was the most complete individual with regard to the perfection of humility. Aval b'mnei shechaser os yud b'chavod Hashem yisbarach. But he was punished here. There was a reflection, an analysis done by God, and it was reflected in the way it was written in the Torah. Because he missed a yud, he forgot to mention a yud, when it came to hitting the rock, and when he was punished for hitting the rock. Sha'amar, because he said, Hamina Sela Hazeh, Notzi Lachem Mayim. So he said, from this rock, should we take out water? So V'hayala lomar yotzi klapi Hashem yisparach. He should have said yotzi, meaning he will, as opposed to notzi, which is us. Laficha chaser osa kasa bechvodo. So the pasuk missing the yud is trying to allude to that story where Moshe was lacking somewhere or somehow in anivas. Mida keneged mida, and this is a mida keneged mida. Kach shamati v'nahehi. So this is what he heard. He heard a nice drasha in shul, and he thought it was a nice idea. Elisha teva ba'a kemishbata shelo b'chaseras. But the letter itself really does come min adin in terms of grammar without chaseras, shelo b'chaseras. Okay. Umasha hosif me'od. So his first point is this idea, this concept that anivas of Moshe was really complete, except for this one instance, which was in Bamidbar Chaf. If you look at the pasuk, source number 4, it says, "Vayakilu Moshe v'Aaron esakahal al pnei asala, vayomer lahem shimuna marim amin asala zen notzi lachem ayim." So Moshe and Aaron were angry. Klal Yisrael were complaining, and they said, "Listen now, you you rebellious ones, from this rock notzi lachem ayim, we will bring you water." It's a question. So he should have said Yotzi Lachemayim. Yotzi as a reference to Hashem, but he said us, meaning him and Aaron. So what exactly is going on over there? That's the question. The question is, what was he lacking in that story as such that it reflects poorly on his anivas in a little bit, in a very minor way? So where was the lack of anivas there? What did Moshe and Aaron think that didn't reflect anivas? And then from that, we can derive and we can deduce what exactly the definition of anivas is from Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar. So let's just keep going. He keeps talking about the nature of humility. And he says, Umasha hosif me'od ki aderach ha'yishara shibor lo ha'adam, shiyavar lo ha'adam v'chol sharamidos tu ha'matsua. So the reason why it says anav me'od by Moshe is because most midos, this is famous, classic, most midos, you should be in the middle. Avab midazu ro'i shiyata min ha'matsua v'shi yisrachek el ha'katza acharon. But when it comes to the midah of being humble, you should really go to the extreme of humility. And that's where Chazal say that you should be very, very lowly in spirit. So I think that means that you should really try to focus and emphasize recognition of your real insignificance in the framework of the universe, in the framework of humanity, and relative to God. So then he adds in this extra point, which I really don't want to define, but he says that Moshe was the anav amongst the humans and amongst creatures on this earth. That's why it says Adama, it doesn't say Aretz. V'havinze ki hu ki inyan v'yinachem Hashem ki asas Adam ba'aretz, hosif ba'aretz l'inyan mechuvan v'lo amar ba'adama. So Hashem uses the term Aretz to include the whole world, including the malachim, not just humans. Bavur ki Aretz mila koleles. The term Aretz includes everything. But when it comes to destroying, when it says emche al pnei adama over there, so hadama is referring to the world, the physical world. V'sham kasafti b'mekomo, v'zeu shukasav v'odil v'nei adam v'rosov, yishlecha lahav v'nkinuig v'rosov v'mochusov v'zem v'vor. Okay, so I don't really want to take up the end of Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar. I just wanted to focus on the beginning. So he mentions a point about anivas, and he says that Moshe was the greatest anav, but there was some lack of anivas when it came to the story of the Sela, that because he said at the very end, notzi lachem ayin, that we will bring out water from this rock, as opposed to saying he will, so that was really a knock on Moshe. It was a flaw, and in fact, that was why he was punished, or one of the reasons why he was punished. So what exactly is this idea of anivas, according to Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar? So I think that Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar is highlighting another point, another idea about anivas, which is that part of anivas is recognizing your shvelus, which you mentioned before. But Moshe's flaw over there in the moment when he was angry was I don't think he felt godlike in that moment, because, you know, I don't want to superimpose a flaw like that on Moshe. But perhaps Moshe and Aaron both felt like they were indispensable to this nes. Maybe perhaps they felt like this nes could not occur without them. Not that they were the ones who were creating the nes, or not that they at all were in control of the nes, but that Hashem, the only way, or that Hashem's desire is that they be dispensable to this nes. And the reality of anivas And there's a famous story about Moshe Rabbeinu which expresses the opposite, is that part of anivus is recognizing that you're always dispensable. And I think that's really clear from Moshe, the story about Moshe. I think I heard this from Rabbi Cheat, so I don't want to take credit, but I think that the story about Moshe, when he was traveling to represent the Jewish people, and he was traveling doing the shlichus of Hashem, Hashem just appointed him to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, but he didn't do the mitzvah of milah, and there was a point where he was almost killed, and Zipporah had to save his life by cutting off the orla of their son. So one of the ideas over there that I remember Rabbi Chait mentioning was that it shows you that Moshe and any individual is not indispensable to God's will. And if Moshe would have been killed, so Hashem would have figured out a different way to accomplish the feat. So the flaw, the anav, is someone who recognizes that they're never indispensable. They're always dispensable. And even for a brief moment, Moshe's anivus was lacking, in that for a brief moment, he felt like he was indispensable to this nes. And any feeling like that is contradictory to anivus. It's really connected, the idea of shvelus, of really recognizing man's ultimate insignificance on a philosophical level. So that's another idea So I think all of these ideas are true, and they're all expressions of anivus. And that's why the name of the shir is defining humility, but I just want to highlight different points about anivus. So Rashi's mentioning the point about patience, that patience is a byproduct of shvelus, which is ultimately anivus, the two together. And Rabbeinu Bachya is highlighting the idea or the reality in the mind of man that they're not indispensable, that humans can be replaced all the time. And even the greatest human being like Moshe Rabbeinu could have been replaced, even though he was appointed by Hashem to do this, to do these miracles and to help the Jews get out of Mitzrayim. Nevertheless, he could have been replaced. And that's part of anivus, recognizing that you're never indispensable. And Moshe, for a moment, was lapsed in that element. And that's why there was a little slight flaw in his anivus. And then there's one other idea that I wanted to mention based on the psukim, and then we'll get to some fun stories in the Gemara. I think they're really interesting. So the next shita is the Ramban that I wanted to look at, and he says, "V'tama ish Moshe anav me'od, la'agid ki Hashem kanalo ba'avur in vanuso." It should be say in vasanuso. So it's to teach us that Hashem was zealous for Moshe. Because Moshe, he wasn't affected, insulted by anybody who argued with him. He wasn't insulted personally. And even if he knew that they had said this about him, he wouldn't care. And that was the nature of his anivus. So Moshe had no interest in the title and the greatness of being the leader. He gained no enjoyment and no pride from his position. And he certainly didn't feel above his brother and sister, and they still were chote, and they spoke about it for nothing, for no purpose. And in the Sifri it says they even said this in front of Moshe. So Moshe didn't care. He was able to overcome. Yaskir Anuso, it should be, I think it's in Vasanuso, it's just Sava V'lo Anam. So again, it's mentioning his patience, that he didn't respond to them, Hashem Kinalo. So Hashem, he's fighting the battles for Moshe, because Moshe really doesn't care. So the Ramban is highlighting one other element of anivus. So another aspect of anivus is seeing the fallacy of titles, that people get very drawn into titles, doctor, rabbi, all these things. I think there's a story about the Rav that he used to book his flights with, I think, like Joe Solo, I think, or back then you didn't have to use your whole name. So it was Joe Solo or even Joe Soloveitchik, but he was never machbid. He was never careful about mentioning his title as basically Gadol Ador, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi. And Moshe, that's the idea of anivus of Moshe, that in the human realm, he wasn't at all infatuated or interested or drawn in to any titles, any positions of superiority. So the other idea of anivus that the Ramban is pointing out is that a true anav, like Moshe, who's the most anav, is the person who sees through the fallacy of titles to the utmost degree, who's not intrigued by it, doesn't get any pride from it even after he's in the position, you know, has no interest in it. Just all he cares about is, I guess, gaining knowledge from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we see that throughout Moshe's life, that he didn't really want to take on the role of being the Shliach Hashem, and that's part of his anivus, that he had no interest in Gedulah because he realized or recognized that Gedulah is a fallacy, it's a farce. It doesn't really mean anything in the real world, in the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the philosophical world. They're just things that are made up by man to give people a sense of pride, and it's false pride. So that's the idea of anivus. So the Mefarshim, again, highlight three concepts about anivus that I just wanted to summarize at this point, and then, you know, open up for questions. But Rashi's saying that anivus is tied to savlanus, which I think is the concept of a recognition of a lack of control that emerges from seeing your true significance philosophically. Rabbeinu Bachya, he's highlighting the idea of recognizing you're dispensable, that you're not indispensable, and that was the flaw of Moshe. And the Ramban, he talks about the idea of the fallacy of human titles, that there's no reality, there's no truth to having a title, and these things are just made up, they're not real, and Moshe was not intrigued by them, nor was he affected by them at all, in any sense. So that is the quality of anivus that Moshe possessed, and that's why he was an anav me'od. He went to the extreme in the sense that he really had the truest sense and the truest idea of his own real significance in a philosophical sense. So are there any questions? I just don't want to keep going because we're going to look at the Gemara next. If there are any questions, feel free to do so. Ask, please.
Rabbi Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't have a chumash in front of me, so my memory might be a little faulty. But when the Paro told Moshe that, get out of here the next time you see my face, you're going to die. So did not Moshe leave Bechari off when he was angry? And he said you spoke well?
That, say it again, say the end of it. Bechari off, yeah.
Doesn't it say in the Chumash that Moshe left Bechari off?
Yeah, but he said you spoke well. Yeah, was he personally affected? I mean, it's a classic question. So I think Bechari off means that he really didn't take anything personally. It was Bechari off because he was always representative of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he saw himself as the Shliach Hashem. So I think that's the answer. In terms of his anivus, he wasn't affected personally by Paro. He was just, his chari off was a reflection of what he, or his attachment to God and fighting for the Jewish people, fighting for God's will. So I think that's how you would answer it, that he was really selfless in that chari off. It wasn't a personal chari off.
But
yeah. That's true. But what's your question? Whether or not he was an anav in that situation? Like, what's the... I'm not understanding. Yeah.
You're saying that part of anivus, or part of being impatient, is that you can't do anything. In other words, you feel that you could really...
Oh, control. You mean a recognition of the fact that things are out of your control. Yeah.
Right.
Serious. Yeah.
So I'm understanding...
So why did Moshe get angry? You're saying why did Moshe get angry in that situation?
Exactly.
It could be that he didn't understand the Hashgacha. Maybe he was angry about that. Maybe he wasn't angry about the practical, but he was angry that he thought he had a certain idea of what the plan was going to be and how the Hashgacha was going to work out, and the frustration came about from like a lack of knowledge, from a lack of understanding of how God's Hashgacha was supposed to work out in that situation.
Well, you can't say that because if with respect...
Yeah.
You can't really say that according to your definition, because that would mean that Moshe knew better than HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. No, he's not saying that he knows better. He's frustrated because he had a certain it's like when you're frustrated with a svara or when you're frustrated when you think you have a svara and then you hear the Rebbe and he has a different svara than you, and his svara is better, obviously, and you recognize that. You're accepting the fact that your Rebbe's svara is better, but you're frustrated with the fact that you can't get it yet. You don't understand it yet. So Moshe's frustration was about an inability to really comprehend, not that he thought better than God, but he was frustrated at his inability to comprehend the Hashgacha, to understand what the plan was, not that he thought that he necessarily had a better plan. It's like a frustration... I'm equating it to frustration and shir. So if you think your svar is good, but your Rebbe says it's garbage, and you realize that your Rebbe has a better methodology than you, and he's been doing this for longer than you, so it's frustrating. It makes you angry. So it's not that you're not angry at you know, the lack of control. You're angry and frustrated because you want the knowledge and you can't grasp the knowledge. So that's a different type of anger, I think. All right, so that's a good question, though. Thank you. I appreciate it. So the next Gemara. Yes. Yeah.
Just one other question. The story with the Moshe, God basically saying, I'll wipe the Jews out, we'll start fresh with you, basically.
Yeah.
How does that seems to, you know, be an antithetical to the very notion of Anivos?
That Moshe didn't he turned it down. What do you mean?
He did turn it down, but it seems like, you know, how do you Mimanoshach? I mean, if they're supposed to take away the message, or is that like sort of where you have to get to in the conclusion ultimately? And
yeah,
there's some sort of insight there.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think that's the answer. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Good question. All right. So let's keep going. And there's a really good Gemara here that I found, I happened upon on Shavuos. So again, it's in Sota and the whole Gemaras are interesting over there. It's all about Birkas Kohanim. So very practical. And then there's this little foray into the stories about Rabba Bahu. So it says, V'amar Rabba Bahu, Mereish Hava Amina in Vasana, I can't say this well, in Vasana, there you go. So at the beginning, I thought that I was very humble. This is Rabbi Abahu. Ana, Kevan de Chazina le the Rabbi Abba de Minako. So when I saw that Rabbi Abba de Minako, de Amar Ihu Chatama, the Amar Amore Chatama. So he said one reason, and he had a Mitargim. Amore is a Mitargim. So it's an interpreter, a person who explains what the Rebbe is saying to the Am. Look at Rashi, Amore, Hamatargim L'Rabbe Mashu Lochesh Lo B'Shas Drasha. So the way it used to work in the old days is that the Rebbe used to give shir, and he would kind of whisper or say it in a normal tone, and then this Mitargim had a loud voice, and he would express what the Rebbe was trying to say. So Rabbi Avohu, he once witnessed Rabbi Abba, from Akko, he once witnessed him and his Mitargim, and Rabbi Abba, it's really strange that it's Avahu and Abba, but Rabbi Abba, he gave one reason, like one svara for an idea that he was giving over in Shir. And his Amore, his Mitargim, changed the reason. So he said, the reason for a tzitzis is because Kvod Shemayim, and then his Mitargim said, no, it's to remember the mitzvos, just hypothetically. So below Kupid, and he didn't care. He didn't correct the guy. He didn't correct the Mitargim. Amina lav in Vasana Ana. And then I realized that I'm not really an Anav. So Rabbi Avohu says, at first I thought I was an Anav, which is a funny thing to say. Why would he even say that? But then afterwards he says, I'm not really an Anav because I saw this story with Rabbi Abba where he was giving shir. He gave a reason for an idea for a mitzvah, for example, and his Mitargim changed it and he wasn't even angry. He didn't even correct him, it seems like. He just went forward and he kept going. So the Gemara keeps going and says, Uma in Vasanuse de Rabbi Avohu. So what exactly was Rabbi Avohu's anivas? He's saying that I thought I was an anav. So why did he think he was an anav? So de Amra la de Bisu de Amore de Rabbi Avohu la de Bise de Rabbi Avohu. So the two wives were talking. The wife of Rabbi Avohu was talking to the wife of his Mitargim, Rabbi Avohu's Mitargim, not Rabbi Abba's. Hadi dan lo tzarech le'lidach. So the wife of the Mitargim said that my husband doesn't need your husband. So the only reason why he's the Mitargim and he waits on Rabbi Avohu is because Rabbi Avohu was somebody who was respected by the king and he actually had a relationship with the Caesar. Look at Rashi. So the wife of the Amore was sticking up for her husband, for her hubby, and she's saying to Rabbi Avohu's wife, my husband's just as good as your husband, and he doesn't need your husband. My husband should be the Rebbe, and you should be the Mitargim, your husband. Yekar de Malchusa, Sharei Rabbi Avohu, Nisso Panim Eves HaMelech. He was known in the house of the Melech, Kedamrina Bechagiga. They found favor with him. Nisso Panim Kigon Rabbi Avohu Be Kesar. So you see in the Chagiga that Rabbi Avohu was known to the king. Uve Sanhedrin Amar Da Havu Nafki Amhasa De Be Kesar La'ape Umashin Kame Rabba Da Ame Midbarna La'umse. And it was the case that whenever Rabbi Avohu would go to the king, the women would come out and they would sing that he's coming, this great man's coming, the head of his people is coming. So anyways, go back to the Gemara. So the wife of the Mitar game of Rebbe Abahu was trash talking, we'll call it trash talk, with the wife of Rebbe Abahu, and they're trash talking about who's better. And so Uzla de Bissu, so go back to the Gemara, the wife of Rebbe Abahu went to her husband, Amrle le Rebbe Abahu, she said to Rebbe Abahu, so she said what she heard, and expecting Rebbe Abahu to get annoyed. So Amar La, so he said, Umay nafkalech mina mini umine is kale sila. So he kind of brushed it off, and he said, what's the difference? Either way, whether he thinks he's better than me or not, between the two of us, we're going to be able to elevate the Shevach of Hashem. We're going to really, give praise to Hashem, and people will recognize the greatness of Hashem through his Torah. So Rabbi Avohu, his anivos was expressed in this story, that really a normal person, or not a normal, but I'm saying a normal non-tzaddik like Rabbi Avohu, would typically get annoyed the fact that, his mitar game thought he was better than him, but he didn't care. He just said, listen, so what we're going to do is we're going to keep going, and it's for the best. We're going to do the best that we can, and because of him, we're going to be able to bring about ideas and knowledge to the world. Okay, so the question is twofold. One is, what is Rabbi Avohu's statement that I thought I was an un of? Why is he talking about that? And second of all, what's the difference between the two stories? Why is the anivus of Rabbi Abba min Akko better than the anivus of Rabbi Avohu? So let's just, I want you to think about that question while I do this Meiri, so you can kind of zone out if you want to, or I could just do the Meiri. So just in terms of the first question, he has a really good shot, a really good idea as to why the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Avohu said, at first I thought I was an un of. So he says over there, Lo'olam yizdariz adam zrizus yaseira lahashlam atzmo v'midas ha'anava v'alafil nisparsein be'enav b'yoser lo yachzik atzmo b'chach. El yizdariz lahaflik bo'osamida b'chol yom derech. So the idea is that a person should be diligent when it comes to perfecting yourself with regard to anivas. Even if it's a known thing and you know that you're an anav, you shouldn't think of yourself as an anav and be muchzak. You shouldn't be confident in your anivas. But you should always try to be differentiating yourself with your anivas. And he explains, Derech ara amar Rabbi Avohu mereish havamina in vasana ana kevin de chazina le de Rabbi Abba de amar luhu chad taima va amori amar taima achrina velo kapid rotzolomar sha amora hamamuna tachtov lahashmias devarav machlifo vahu eno medaktik alav bechach amina lav in vasana ana. So he just quotes the Gemara after that. But I think his first point is interesting. He's saying that the Gemara, you would have just passed by this Gemara, I think, and not really analyzed this point. But he's teaching you from the fact that Rabbi Avohu says, I thought I was an anav. It shows you that a person who's striving to be an anav constantly has to be reflecting and analyzing their anivas. It's not something that you can, you could just achieve and then sit back on and not work on it. There's always room and capacity to continue growing in your humility. And that's what's expressed from the fact that Rabbi Avohu said, I thought I was an anav, but I realize that I'm not an anav. Meaning that he was striving for anivus, and he was willing to constantly reassess himself. It's like a tshuva process on a consistent basis every day. He was trying to recognize whether he can improve in terms of his anivus or not. So that's, I think, an interesting point about, deos. But the main idea, the main question is, what's the difference between the anivus of Rabbi Avohu and the anivus of Rabbi Abba? Why was Rabbi Abba's anivus, the fact that his mitar game said something, and he was cool with it, and he was chill with it, and he didn't yell at the mitar game. Why is that better on Nivos than the case where the wife was trashing him by Rabbi Avohu? So what is the difference between the two? That's the question that was troubling us when I was learning the sugya with my chavrusa. And what exactly is the anivus? Why is the anivus of Rabbi Abbas better than the anivus of Rabbi Avohu? So I'll take possibilities if anybody has one at this point.
Wasn't one of them in public?
Okay.
In public.
Okay.
And that's definitely more boosh.
Okay.
To win the talking.
Okay, that was the svara of Machabrusa. It's a good svara. So you could say that one possibility. What'd you say?
Very smart guy.
Yeah, so Machabrusa, he had that svara. He said that one is in public, and it's harder, I guess. Or it's an expression of greater anivus if in public something happens that puts you down versus in private. In private, it's easier. It's not as embarrassing. Okay, so that's a good idea. I had a different approach, a little bit different. So I was thinking that normally we wouldn't say it's an un-of for a person to not represent Torah properly. So if you're giving an idea, a concept over that you believe to be accurate, and then somebody else distorts what you're saying, so I would think that if you're a Rebbe and you're trying to teach your Talmidim, that you would be pretty angry and upset, and you would be justified if somebody changed the reason, because in your mind, you should have a certain level of confidence in your in what you're giving over, and if somebody changes the reason, then they're really distorting the Torah in your mind, and it might not be as harsh as that, but it should. But definitely, there's a feeling or a sense that the ideas are coming out wrong. So really, that. So what is the anivus there? So the anivus, I think, of Rabbi Avahu is greater than Rabbi Abba is greater than Rabbi Avahu, because what it shows you is that really, when the Amore, when the Metargim gave the different reason, Rabbi Avahu was able to recognize that the reasoning of the Metargim was actually better than his own. Because had it been worse, I think Rabbi Avahu would say something. His goal is to teach Torah, to teach the most accurate view of Torah. But the anivus of Rabbi Avahu was expressed in the fact that he didn't correct him, because he actually was able to acknowledge in the moment that the reasoning of the Amore, of the Metargim, was actually better than his. So I think that that's really the one of the hardest areas, the aspects of anivus. I think, you know, I'm quoting a lot of, my yeshiva Rebbeim, but I think I remember Rabbi Pesach Chait, I think he mentioned once that the, you know, anivus is really expressed if you can see somebody else's idea better than your own idea. And that's one of the hardest things to do when you're learning with somebody else. Oftentimes, it's really hard to overlook your own svara and to see somebody else's svara as being somebody else's theory and somebody else's concept as being better than your own. And the fact that Rabbi Abba was able to do that in the moment shows you his state of mind, that he was always in a state where he was able to recognize the possibility of him being wrong and accepting a better idea, a better concept. So that is the anivus of Rabbi Avahu, and that's why it was greater than Rabbi Abba, and that's why it was greater than Rabbi Avahu. So Rabbi Avahu was somebody who could brush off an insult, but Rabbi Abba was demonstrating a higher level of anivus, which is the ability to accept somebody who's insulting you, accept their ideas better than your own, despite the fact that there's a personal insult involved. And so I think that's why it's a higher level. So that was my interpretation of the story, that it's not just the public-private, but the extra aspect of being able to see another person's ideas, even if they're underneath you, they're your Metargim, in the moment where you're being embarrassed, to see that idea and grasp it and really accept that it's better than your own. So that's a much higher level of anivus. So that's what I wanted to share. That was my possibility. So we have a couple more stories here. They're really good stories, so we'll go through them. So the next story on Rabbi Avahu, I think there's three of them total. So Visu Rabbi Avahu Emnu Rabbanan Alea Lemimnia Varesha Kevan de Chazya Le Rabbi Abba Deminako Denefishi Le Bale Chovos Amar Luhu Ikaraba. So there's another story with the two of them, Rabbi Avahu and Rabbi Abba. And what happened was Rabbi Avahu was promoted to Rosh Yeshiva. And he saw that Rabbi Abba was poor. He had a lot of creditors, Bale Chovos. So he said to the Rabbanan, you should hire Rabbi Abba rather than me. And interestingly enough, look at Rashi. He says, Chacham gadol v'ro'i leishe barosh yoser mimeni. So he said to the Rabbanan that he's greater than me, and he really deserves to be the Rosh Yeshiva more than myself. Barosh v'nostin lo manos u'mashirno so. And in doing so, they used to give a lot of money to the Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know if it's like that anymore, but everyone would give a lot of money to the Rosh Yeshiva. Kadeshe chasha v'yishmu dvarav, so that people will listen to them. Kedisanya, like it says, v'akoin agadol me'echav galuhu mishal echav. So the same halacha exists by the Kohen Gadol, that the Kohen Gadol, if he's poorer than his brethren, so all the other Kohanim have to give him money in order to make him the richest Kohen. So it's the same thing with the Rosh Yeshiva, that back in the day, the Rosh Yeshiva was given a lot of money, and the reasoning was the same, that he should be looked at and he should be respected. So the story is that Rabbi Avahu was expressing his anivus because he saw that Rabbi Abba was poor. And in doing so, he offered the job to Rabbi Abba, and he told the Rabbanan to consider Rabbi Abba. So what is the story here? What's going on? So another story about the anivus, but I think we have to understand the pshat. So is it that Rabbi Avahu was greater than Rabbi Abba, or was he less? So if he was greater, then he shouldn't have given the Rosh Yeshiva spot to Rabbi Abba, because it's a Torah position, and the person who's best suited has to take that position. But if he was worse, then what does it matter that he was poor? So it must be that they were kind of on the same level, that they were on a similar level of knowledge. And Rabbi Avohu was saying that you should take into account the fact that he needs the money more than I do. So what is Danivus here exactly? So Danivus, I think it ties into one of the shitas on the Chumash, which is that really Rabbi Avohu, he wasn't drawn to the title. And he looked beyond the title itself, and he looked at it as if it was just a regular job. If it's a regular job, I don't need the money. He needs the money. So all things being equal, the title was insignificant to Rabbi Avohu. So without that, without the need for the title, so now we can analyze the situation in a more objective manner. Do I need the money for this job, or does he need the money for this job? Because we're both equal, and we're both deserving of the title. And therefore, he was able to defer to Rabbi Abba. But another aspect of Anivus we see by Rabbi Avohu, again, is similar to what we said before, which is that he recognized the fallacy of titles, that he recognized, or he saw, that the title of Rosh Yeshiva is really unimportant. It means nothing in terms of your own greatness, your own perfection, your own humility in general, your own character. It's just a title that the Rabbanon give to you if you're deserving of it. But the fact that he was willing to acknowledge the job element, the money element, which is of a typical job that, you know, you think about money, it shows you that he really wasn't drawn into the title at all. He had no it gave him of no significance and of no importance. Otherwise, he would have said, I'll take the job. So that's the other idea. And then there's one great, we'll just skip down to 13, one last story about Anivus. This is also, I think, a really interesting story. I think you guys will enjoy this. So Rabbi Avohu, Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Iklu'ula hu Astra. So this is a different one. We don't have Rabbi Abba anymore, so the names are kind of different, so it makes it a little bit easier, but his name is Rabbi Chia bar Abba. We'll just call him Rabbi Chia to make it simpler. So Rabbi Avohu and Rabbi Chia, they went to this place. Rabbi Avohu Darash Be'agadata. So Rabbi Avohu was giving shir in the place that they went to on Agadata, on stories from the Gemara and the Chazal. Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Darash B'Shemaisa. But Rabbi Chia, he was teaching halachos. He was teaching halacha l'maisa, halacha in general. So what happened was, Shavkua Kuli Alma L'Rabbi Chia Bar Abba V'Azul L'Gabe D'Rav Avohu. So all the students who were in Rav Chia's class, they left because they were bored, I guess, and they went to Rabbi Avohu's class because, you know, he was teaching more interesting stuff, stories. People love stories. So Rav Avohu said, So Rav Avohu was really disturbed by this. It really bothered him. Amar Lei, and he said to him, to Rabbi Chia, Emshalach Mashal. Sorry, it was Chalish Daite of Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia was bothered by the fact that everyone left his shir. So Amar Lei, so he said to him, Rav Avohu said to Rav Chia, in order to make him feel better, Em sholach mashal lama davar doma. So I'll give you a little analogy of what it's similar to. L'shnei b'nei Adam, echad mocher avanim tovos, ve'echad mocher minei sidkis. So if you have two merchants, one is selling precious diamonds, gems, and the other one is selling, we'll call it costume jewelry. Al mi koftzin, lo al zesh mocher minei sidkis. So who do the people jump to? Is it not to the person who sells the cheaper stuff? And the reason is because more people can afford it. So more people are drawn to the cheaper costume jewelry, and you have fewer people who are drawn, or at least can afford, the pricier stuff. So it just happens that it's not that the shear that I'm giving, it was an analogy, it's not that the shear that I'm giving is better than your shear. If anything, I think that they should go to your shear, to the halacha shear. It's just that I'm giving them the cheaper stuff. I'm giving them the stuff that people enjoy. And you're giving them the more precious stuff, stuff that people are naturally drawn to, but they might have, they might not see its value. So that's the difference between us. And nevertheless, if you go to the 15, the Gemara says, Kol yoma hava malave Rabbi Chia bar Abba l'Rabbi Avohu ad ushbize mishum nekar de Be'kesar. So every day, Rabbi Chia would escort Rabbi Avohu to his home, because Rabbi Avohu, again, was really well known and he was recognized in the king's circles. Hahu yuma aluya Rabbi Avohu l'Rabbi Chia bar Abba ad ushbize v'afil hachi lo isos of daite mine. And that day, Rabbi Avohu walked with Rabbi Chia to his house, and still, Rabbi Chia was still bothered by the fact that the people left his shear and they went to Rabbi Abahu's shear. So this is a really interesting story. Regardless of the Aniva's point, I think it's just, we see this nowadays, Bizman Hazeh. I mean, it's just reflective of the reality of people's psyches, that the storytellers and the people who teach Agadatas, they're more enjoyable or more, they draw in more people than those who teach Halacha, probably brisker derech methodology. And people are drawn to the stories. The storytellers are more popular. But Rabbi Avohu, again, Rabbi Avohu is demonstrating another aspect of Anivus, which is that even when he could have, or a normal non-tzaddik like Rabbi Avohu would have been impressed by the amount of people coming to a shir, and he could have attributed it to his own character and his own teaching style. He could have said, I'm a better teacher, and that's why people are coming to me. I'm more charismatic, I'm more emphatic. But he wasn't lying. He said the truth. He recognized that it wasn't about him, that it was really the psyche of the Am, that they're drawn to a certain topic more so than another topic. So he was willing to be an objective observer of the situation. So the last idea of Anivus is that even in a situation where you would be drawn in to an ego satisfaction, you could see it as being a result or a byproduct of your own abilities. Here he was looking at it as almost a scientist, as an observer, as an objective person. And he was willing to accept the fact that, or at least he was willing to say that it's all about the material. Some material is more impressive and more enjoyable and more exciting than other material. And that's the only reason why the people were drawn in. So the anivus of his was that he didn't give in to the ego draw that was standing right before him. That he was able to avoid that and really look at the situation in a more objective way. So I think that's the other aspect of anivus. But also a great story to keep in your back pocket, because of the relevance of it, especially Bizman Hazeh, in terms of the attraction that people have to the storytellers that exist even nowadays. All right, so I just wanted to review the shir quickly. Basically, the shir, we went through the concept of humility, and we tried to define the different points about it and different Rishonim on it and Gemaras, and we started with Rashi, and his idea of Anivus was tied to a recognition of the self and the self-importance on a philosophical level, and as a result, acknowledging a lack of control. That's Savlanus. Rabbi Nebachya was tying it into the flaw that Moshe and Aaron expressed, which is what I was defining or saying is a feeling of being indispensable to the Nes. And the reality of an Anav is that if you really recognize your true importance, true significance, you'll realize that you're always dispensable. And then the Ramban spoke about Anivus in the framework of how you view human titles. Are human titles is the human position, is that of any significance to you, or do you recognize it as a fallacy and you recognize and you see through it? So Moshe possessed that to the utmost. He really had no interest in positions, titles, anything like that. And then we took it further and we went through three stories about Rabbi Avohu. The first one was one about Rabbi Avohu and Rabbi Abba. He says that he thought he was an Anav, but Rabbi Avohu was really greater. And the Meiri points out that Rabbi Avohu was engaged constantly in analyzing and reflecting on his own Anivus in order to grow as an individual. But the question was, what's the difference between the two Anivus? In Rabbi Abba's case, the Mitargim changed the reasoning in the Shir. And in Rabbi Avohu, the Mitargim insulted him and he was okay with it. So the idea I was trying to express, other than it, one being public and private, was that you see from Rabbi Avohu that he should have really responded and corrected the Mitargim if he was really wrong. But Rabbi Abba didn't, and the reason is because he was able to see the other person's idea, even though the position of the person was lower than his, the Mitargim, and even though it was on a very spontaneous moment, nevertheless, he was able to be in a state whereby he was always appreciating other knowledge, and he could always recognize the fact that he might be wrong. And then we saw two other stories. One was the fact that he also saw beyond the titles, Rabbi Avohu, and that's why he considered Rabbi Abba's financial position, to show you that he was able to look at this as a job, purely as a job, financially, as opposed to taking into account the significance of the title and the position. And then finally, the last idea was Rabbi Avohu's ability to be an objective observer as to why he was getting big crowds. The crowds weren't coming because of him. He could have said, or he could have, a normal ego would draw a person in and say that it's me, I'm a better teacher, I'm more exciting, I'm more charismatic. But I don't think he was being lowly, he was being honest. He recognized that the material itself was more exciting, the stuff that he was teaching the Rabbi Chiya. So he was able to withdraw from the trap of ego and become an objective observer of the situation and analyze it from that framework. Okay, so that's the end of the shiur.